Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC card. With your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and...
The Guru, back once again for UFC Vegas. No, for not UFC Vegas, UFC Abu Dhabi, UFC 267 in Abu Dhabi, special start time, Jan Blachowicz versus... Glover Teixeira for the light heavyweight belt. Also, Peter Yan versus Corey Sandhagen for the interim bantamweight championship with a bunch of other fights on here that are, I mean, it is a stacked card. It's been a couple really great cards, you know, but this card is stacked top to bottom. But without further ado, we have a new friend in the building, somebody you guys might recognize. Mr. Dan Levy, best fight picks, man. What's going on?
Chilling, man. I appreciate y'all having me. It's always been a pleasure following you guys on Twitter. So now to actually see, to match the faces with the names and to chop it up with y'all, it's exciting, man. And especially on a card like this. So let's do it.
Definitely.
We really appreciate your time, man, especially during the World Series right now for your Braves. So we're pulling for them.
Hell appreciate yeah. That. Let's go, Braves.
Let's go. So, hey, let's get right into it. We got our first fight of the night here. Tajir Ulambekov, nicknameless, versus Alan Nascimento, Puro Oso. He's a pure bear, I guess. Here we go. I mean, this fight, to start off the card, I know Guru always loves saying it. They're looking for some action, and I think they'll get it. You got Nascimento coming out of Shute Box, Diego Lima. You know he's going to march forward, Thai style, looking to get into it. And Ulambekov, yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to be looking to get into it in the wrestling department. So, you know, I think that this is definitely going to be a little bit of an easier matchup than Bruno Silva in his debut. And, yeah, I mean, it goes without saying that Zhumagulov fight, it really probably could have gone Ulambekov's way before he got into the UFC. So as his only loss in his career by decision, he has 7 submission wins, 5 decision wins. And Nascimento's only ever lost by decision, but he's got 14 submissions to his name. This could be a grappler's delight here. What are you guys thinking?
I mean, what I've seen from Ulambekov, I mean, he does kind of stand very straight up. He's very susceptible to the leg kicks, as you've seen in that Bruno Silva fight. He was fairly hittable, you know, for my liking. But he's long and lanky for the division, and that's going to come in handy in this fight. He's willing to spam his left jab, and you know, he really likes to use his length and his pressure to do that. And he's actually really good in the scrambles as well. I feel like he was fairly comfortable in a lot of different areas, which is actually, you know, you like to see that from these, you know, prospects. Nascimento has a Dana White Contender Series loss, you know, before his last fight versus Ravian Paiva, who's fighting Sugar Sean eventually. So that's a cool fight. But, you know, they look to buck Ulambekov against Matthias Nicolau twice, and then Tyson Nam. So I think that kind of goes to show you what they do think of this guy. I just think that they kind of tried to stack the card, and this is the fight they put together. I think Tajir rolls here. But what do you think, Dan?
You know, it's interesting, man, because there's a lot of Russians on this card, and I would actually say that Ulambekov and Shamil Gamzatov are probably kind of on the lower end of the totem pole compared to, you know, the Peter Yans or, you know, some of these other guys like Islam Makhachev, right? So I've just never really been impressed with Ulambekov, man. I thought he lost that fight to Bruno Silva. Some of the regional fights, you don't see that he doesn't put that stamp on the fights that you want to see from these guys. Now, granted, the Russian coast is a great style and it's going to win a lot of fights, but if y'all saw that fight between Nascimento and Paiva, I mean, I still think that's the second best fight in Contender Series history, with the first best being Sodiq Youssef versus Mike Davis. I mean, Paiva versus Nascimento was just an all-out war, scramble fest, just an amazing fight. So I'm stoked to see this guy finally get his opportunity in the UFC. So even though, you know, I'll probably favor Ulambekov, I'm just not – crazy about laying minus 400 on a guy who I consider to be quite underwhelming. So I view this as a dog or pass situation. I can't guarantee a win for the Brazilian or anything, but at a price like this, maybe roll the dice.
I completely agree. I even have in my notes here, like, he very clearly lost round three to Alves before, you know, after winning rounds one and two. He's super sketchy, and I don't love him at this price. I do think that he like you said, he does get it done, but at this price, there's no, I'm not trying to parlay him to get better odds. Like, this is not a fighter that I like to touch. And like you said, so well said, that he is one of the lower, one of the more volatile Russians on this card.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm going to stay away. This isn't one that I have a great feeling on. And yeah, that minus 400 is way too wide, because I think you're right. I think he is getting the rub from some of the other guys on the card here, and everyone's just recognizing the OV at the end of his name. And right. Sure, you know, he is the high-level prospect, and people do know him as such, but I don't think he's quite the same level, and that minus 400 is probably undeserved. And even if he does win, you know, Nascimento isn't going to be afraid to play in his guard, and you know, it could get sketchy down there. So, hey, moving right along, we got Magomed Mustafayev versus Damir Ismagulov. The sniper is coming back off of a pretty decent layoff here. I mean, the last time that we saw him fight was a split decision loss to Brad Riddell, and that fight was really scrappy. I mean, Riddell dropped him a couple times, right? I thought it was super interesting. You know, Mustafayev actually knocked out Rafael Fiziev. Right. So if that tells you anything about his level of striking and ability to get out there and put on a performance, I mean, those spinning kicks are just really something else. But the other thing that you need to know about Mustafayev is that his grappling is also, you know, capable, extremely capable. 3.31 takedowns, 50%. His takedown defense isn't great, but I think he's a little too willing to kind of work from bottom. So that's why he's giving up these takedowns more often than not, especially, you know, 7 against Kevin Lee. That's going to skew your stats right there. What are you thinking?
I got a question for everybody.
Yeah.
What would this line be if Mustafayev won that split decision versus Riddell?
But here's,
because that was a damn close fight.
Here's the counter argument. Mm-hmm. Sure. Should it have truly been a split decision?
It's a good question. I mean, that knockdown, I do think that Riddell, you know, scored the more significant strikes in that fight. And really, you know, the grappling pressure and pace was put on by Mustafayev, but it wasn't really followed up with a ton of control time or even strikes.
Yeah.
You know, and even if he did land the control time, he wasn't really, I mean, he still only landed 28 total strikes.
That's why this fight's so interesting, because they both are like kind of low output fighters in that respect. They don't have super high striking numbers.
Well, I feel like Ismagulov, the one thing I will say is, as far as, you know, we see some of these guys that go out there and put on performances, he's not the biggest finisher, at least at the UFC level. And even against some of the lower level guys, he wasn't finishing them. Now, Alves even gave him a little scare in round one, and that sticks in my mind as to what, you know, Mustafayev can provide some of those same things, and probably with a little bit more urgency in his grappling. So, you know, Ismagulov minus 290, Mustafayev plus 230. I am leaning towards the Mustafayev side, just as a betting perspective, at least.
I like the dog spot on Mustafayev in this spot, especially at plus 230, because these lines that you're reading on DraftKings are definitely a little bit different than the ones I've been reading on FanDuel. Like, for the last fight, even, that you can get a much different line. For this fight, you can get Ismagulov at minus 245 and Mustafayev at plus 194. So I think that's showing you where the line's going to start drifting to as the week goes on.
Dan, what are you seeing here?
You know, they're both strikers, but they're both like vastly different in their styles of striking. I mean, I'd say that Ismagulov is kind of more of the surgical striker. He's got the better defense, but Mustafayev is that explosive, fast twitch. He's got the heavier hands. The one issue I have with Ismagulov, which was shown in the Alves fight, which you referred to, is maybe there's a little bit of a question of the durability. You know, and obviously that's something that a guy like Mustafayev can capitalize on. The thing I'm worried about is banking on that one big moment. I mean, it could happen. Don't get me wrong. It could totally happen. You see a price like that, then I understand. But I definitely think the minutes are going to be won by Izmagulov. And I like the strength of schedule, and I like how he's been handling it. Like, you saw how he completely dismantled Thiago Moises and made him look like an amateur. And Moises is no slouch at all. And Joel Alvarez, who's an up-and-comer, like, he's been handling his business. But, again, Mustafayev has also paid his dues. So it's really a clash of two strikers where one's the kind of pinpoint, accurate kind of – I don't want to say sniper because, like you said, he's not finishing guys, but he's kind of he'll jab you to death if he has to. I mean, he'll do just enough to win. But Mustafayev, I mean, he can come out here and spin kick Fiziev and finish him. You know, so it should be exciting. I'm gonna lean with Izmagulov, but I mean, you see a price like 230 on Mustafayev, and I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and talk you off of it.
Yeah, and it's not like a dog of the day type of deal, but maybe a little sprinkle. I do want to see weigh-ins. Izmagulov is going to be 2 inches taller, 3 inches more of reach. So I'd like to see, you know, does it look like Izmagulov is like in a different weight class? Let's see the face-offs before we really go too crazy on this one. But
no, I mean, you know that Mustafayev is going to be the shorter man, and he's going to have to close the distance here. But again, he's the more explosive man, so he's one of these guys. He's a big moment guy, and one big moment could change the course of the fight. Alves almost changed the course of the fight with one big moment. Mustafayev is much more experienced at the UFC level, so maybe he does it. But the moments that he's not doing it, the moments that he's taking breaks, that's where he's going to be eating those clean jabs, those straight rights. You know, and this guy. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, do you think this is one of the fights where the grappling sort of negates each other and they spend it mostly striking, or is it gonna be really mixed martial arts and gonna have a little bit of everything in this fight?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I know these guys as primarily strikers, and I think they're gonna try to implement their game. And again, fast twitch versus kind of trying to keep it pretty and trying to point them up. So yeah, it should be an exciting clash of styles.
I'm excited to see it for sure.
Definitely a fun fight. And, you know, I think we definitely take a big drop off here as we move on to our next fight in the middleweight division. Huyao Zhang versus Andre Petroski.
Who?
you know, Petroski comes in on short notice here, filling in for Amadovsky off of a little bit of a sketchy win where, you know, he did drop the second round there. Petroski did to Gilmore, but he comes out and finishes the job in round three. I did think, you know, Yao Zhang, I am interested to see how, you know, his quote-unquote Greco-Roman background is going to hold up now at middleweight, because it really didn't hold up well at the heavyweight division as he's facing Rashard Coulter, and, you know, as he moves down, he starts against Cyril Asker and then moves down against Coulter. You know, it really didn't look great, but let's see. Maybe, you know, now he's actually going to be sizing up well here. But Petroski, you know what his game plan is. Russell gasses out first?
I think that Andre Petroski, I mean, maybe it's square, especially since it's kind of what the Vegas line is predicting too. I just think Andre Petroski's wrestling pressure he's going to be fierce. And I can't predict who has worked on since we've last seen him since 2018. But he was supposed to fight Amadovsky twice. And that fight got pulled both times. And against Rashard Coulter, man, he looked terrible. Like, that fight was horrible. It was really, really a very poor fight. For both guys, Coulter included, who dropped the third round being so gassed. Really, really poor. Honestly, I think Petroski's live for a sub, man. Like, again, I don't know if that's super square. I don't know what the line is.
It's so minus 235 money line for Petroski, plus 190 for Hu. And if you want to go ahead and take a look at the winning methods.
Plus 260 Andre Petroski, yeah, by sub.
Exactly.
I'm cool for like half a unit on that. Why not?
Yeah, I'm personally going to stay away. Dan, what are you thinking?
So I'm thinking I want to see what Yao Zhang looks like at 85s, because first fight against Asker, I believe, was a heavyweight. Next fight against Rashard Coulter, 205, now 185. So, yeah. I mean, what's this dude going to look like, right? But then on the other side of things, you got a guy in Petroski who is a D1 wrestler, and you have to respect those credentials. And, you know, not to generalize, but you tell me I got a D1 All-American or a D1 American. I don't know if he's All-American, but just an American wrestler with a D1 background, you know, fighting a dude from China, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm taking the American there. But he does have a bit of a cardio issue. He's still putting together his MMA game. He was supposed to run through that last guy. Things got sketchy. That second to last fight on the Ultimate Fighter, all like that was a big upset that he lost, you know? So these guys are so green that it's just kind of hard to get a read on it. And the last thing I want to throw out here is that it opened -110 apiece. So Vegas is thinking this is a coin flip. The public isn't. So that just makes me even more intrigued to see what happens. I'm going to lean with Petroski just because of the D1 background, but I don't know, man. Dropping from heavyweight all the way to 85s, I mean, he might be in the best shape of his life. And you guys let me know he had some kind of Greco-Roman background. I didn't even know about that. So maybe he's able to stifle the D1 wrestling.
I thought it was more just funny that I saw it listed somewhere because I was like, I didn't really see that so much on tape per se. I mean, ultimately, I think you're right. I think this is one of those fights where you want to learn a little bit about what these guys have, especially who in a different division. So
I just feel like it's one of those fights that like you'll look back in like a week or a month and you'll be like, oh, Petroski, myself, it was so obvious. I should have bet it. But like you can't live like that. So, but honestly, you're right. You're not sure what Yuzhang is going to look like. So I definitely want to see what he looks like on the scale for sure. And hasn't Petroski had weight issues in the past, or am I imagining that?
I don't know off the top of my head. That's a good question, though. I mean, I know those wrestlers, they cut so much weight for so many years that after a while, you know, it's going to take a toll on your body. So I wouldn't be surprised. I just can't confirm nor deny.
Yeah, I would hate to slander the guy if it's not true. I'm just not
100% sure. Well, hey, I mean, let's get down to a matchup where we might just have a little strong feeling here. We got Mr. Finland, Makwan Ermerkani, versus Lerone Murphy. Apparently the miracle, because this guy got shot in the face, bullet lodged in his lip, and then, yeah, he survived and then ended up training MMA and getting into the UFC. So maybe Lerone Murphy is the miracle. That's funny. I didn't know that was his nickname. So here we go. I mean, let's break it down here. We got Ermerkani off of an extremely disappointing loss against Kamwela Kirk, who was fighting him on short notice, and maybe that played into it. But man, it was just one of those spots where Ermerkani, if he was really who we thought he was, that he should have ran through that opponent. I know Kirk, you know, he did come in impressive, but it just leaves a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. And then you look over across the way, Lerone Murphy. And I mean, this guy is just all around just a fun guy to watch. In my book, I feel like that that draw that he had against the Kugov, he did get taken down a whole bunch, but he did show the ability, you know, especially as the fight, you know, started going on, to get out of those spots. And sure, you know, it didn't look great early, but what I did see is that Murphy does has a pretty legitimate submission game. And he also showed a pretty good top control game and some ground and pound as he's finishing out Ricardo Ramos, who we'll talk about later on the card. So Murphy, his stand-up is great, but I think his ground game is a little unheralded.
I mean, he knows what he's doing on the ground, but I mean, he has no professional wins by submission. So, I mean, I think he's educated down there, but he's not going to be looking for any sort of offensive standpoint. But I think your point is that he's not going to be easily submitted in the first round, I think is more of what you're alluding to.
Well, I'll put it this way, is that he averages just about the same amount of submissions per 15 as Makwan Ermerkani. The way I put it is I bet Lerone Murphy to win by submission against Silva de Andrade, because I figured that there would be some grappling initiated offensively by de Andrade, and you know what, there was, and he did take Murphy's back, but you see Murphy get out of it relatively quickly and reverse position, and it makes me feel comfortable that you get a guy that gets into these spots and he doesn't panic. And then you look at the physical attributes, and then you look at his stand-up. The 42% accuracy isn't great, but with the 63% defense, and he's landing almost a full strike more than his opponent, he's faced some pretty good opponents. I mean, Tukugov's got some power in his left hand. Hamos is a very fun striker, and I mean, he really did away with him. And then Silva de Andrade, that fight was a pretty good back and forth, but I think Silva de Andrade is a bit underrated, especially, I mean, he's just such a fun guy to fight, and he packs a lot of power. So I think we saw Murphy a little more timid, where he's going to come into this fight against Amir Khani. I don't think he's threatened in any which way unless he shoots for a takedown and gives up a front choke opportunity. So, yeah. I mean, for me, Lerone Murphy, we got the line is it's minus 340 on FanDuel, but it's minus 310 on DraftKings. What are you guys thinking?
What do you think, Dan?
I think Makwan Amir Khani is a beast for about 4.5 minutes. He's just got... I think he's got some kind of health issue which prevents him from going hard after he hits that wall, man. I mean, he can grapple his ass off. It's just once he hits that fatigue state, he's got nothing left. And if you've been reading his Instagram post after every single fight he's been losing lately, he says the same thing keeps happening over. He's got an issue with his kidneys and whatever the case may be. I don't think that's been fixed. So I think he comes out here, takes down Lerone Murphy a couple times early, but then he starts to gas. Lerone Murphy does not gas. Lerone Murphy's going to start picking him apart second, third round and get him out of there. So, yeah, give me Lerone Murphy late.
Yeah, I like it, man. He's got the great footwork, feints. He's very explosive. He seems well-rounded. I mean, he seems at 30 years old, he seems like a almost like the perfect prospect, right? Like too good to be true, kind of.
The miracle. So,
I'm excited to really see this fight for sure. And Murphy is part of our parlay, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that's a first leg of our it's going to be an official Crown of Combat play. So it's stay actually, tuned.
It was an early play. We played this one early.
Saturday night.
So hopefully you guys were staying up on our Bet MMA and you got to see that. If you got a moment though, make sure you like the video, subscribe, send it around. Thanks so much for listening. Check out Dan Levy's page as well. Awesome gentleman.
BestFightPicks.com. All right, so we got Shamil Gamzatov versus Mikhail Oleksaychuk. Lord Oleksaychuk. Excuse me.
Yeah, don't mess that up, man.
I can't forget that. But listen, I just think the wrong guy won in Oleksaychuk's last fight.
Facts.
I will say it was a pretty close back and forth. I just thought that Oleksaychuk didn't necessarily do enough in 2 out of the 3 rounds. But apparently 2 of the judges thought so. So that's where we're at. And he came out with such a timid game plan, really trying to conserve his gas. And you can do that against a guy like Bukauskas, I think. You can survive those moments and really not fight your most aggressive game plan and try to conserve your gas tank. I think that's what he did. But, I mean, was it really super effective from any standpoint? I don't know about that. And Gamzatov, I mean, he's going to come out and look to strike, and he does so very efficiently.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, he started as a freestyle wrestler, right? And then he went to the combat sambo. And now he does have the BJJ brown belt. So he seems like he's got the good variety of techniques in his background. I saw a good variety of leg kicks from him as well, with the different high kick, front kick. He really enjoys using the leg kick. But during his fight with Kidson Abreu, man, he initiates in the clinch and then gets taken down. I was not super impressed with him at all in that Kidson Abreu fight, and that was the last time we've seen him, and it was just split decision win. He was booked twice versus Ovince St. Preux, once versus Devin Clark and once versus Darwin Jung, and now finds himself here for Solo Jacek. So I don't really know what to make of this guy. What we've learned is that when there's a high degree of uncertainty, the line gets closer together. So you see this line at minus 164 for Gamzatov and plus 134 for Ola Jacek. It's fair. Like, to me, that's a fair line. So I don't really see too much value in either side. Dan, do you want to try to guide me in the right direction here?
Yeah, I got to be honest. When I watched the Klitson Abreu versus Gamzatov fight live, I kind of thought Klitson Abreu won that fight.
Right, yeah. I was not impressed with this guy at all. Exactly. I thought I was crazy for maybe even thinking that.
Nah, I thought Klitson won. I mean, look, it was a close fight. And as far as Bukauskas and McCall, I mean, that was a close fight too. It was a good fight. The way I kind of view this is, you know, Gamzatov kind of has that Russian coast style, and a lot of times they're going to come out here and win decisions. But McCall kind of has more of that volume style. He's kind of a smaller man for 205. We wanted to see him drop to 85s for a long time, but for some reason he won't do that. But but I got to say, he's battle-tested, man. I mean, he's paid his dues. He's been in there with a lot of tough guys in the UFC. And we're really not sure what to expect from Gamzatov in terms of, like, where's he been? Has he been injured? Is it a visa issue? Does he simply just not need this shit because he's well-connected? Like, what's the deal with him? So, honestly, I kind of view this as a dog or pass situation. And I'll take McCall to be busier than Gamzatov and to win a decision. My only concern, just like with every McCall fight, is the size. The dude's tiny for 205, and you know the ground game ain't the best either. So those are the concerns. But yeah, give me McCall here.
Yeah, I like him as a short dog there. Once again, maybe not a dog of the day here, and maybe I do end up staying away. But I would much rather lean that direction than all of that other uncertainty and a lot of time out of the octagon. But
wait, I have a crazy question now. So yes. Now I'm confused. Because I thought I said McCall, and it's written McCall on Tapology, but FanDuel has it McCarr with an R. And
they messed up.
McCarr. No. It's I think it's Michael. Is that what's actually pronounced? It's Michael Alexeychuk.
It's Michal.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yes. Well, yes. Probably with the proper pronunciation.
FanDuel has it with an R, so they're crazy. All right.
Yeah.
And then I thought
you're good. You're good.
All right. I'll be okay, everybody.
All right. So bringing us right along to our next fight, we have Elizu Zaleski dos Santos, Capoeira. You know he's going to be bringing those spinning kicks. And we have Benoit Saint-Denis, God of War, giving Dayus Figueiredo a little run for his money out there, I guess, right, with the nickname.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, because that's what Figueiredo's nickname translates to in Portuguese, right?
Fair enough.
So, yeah, I mean, we have really, you know, they're well matched up in the size. I'll be honest, I cannot find tape on Saint-Denis. So, I mean, it would be easy to just sit here and say, I lean Zaleski dos Santos minus 215. But I really don't have enough background to give out a suggestion on this fight myself.
I couldn't agree more. I guess I lean Zaleski by whatever, by capoeira crazy knockout, unless he gasses out, and then who knows. So what do you think?
Benoit
Saint-Denis is just kind of like a strong, aggressive grappler. He's gonna try to initiate the takedowns, he's gonna try to transition submissions, he's gonna try to impose his will. I mean, I think he deserves to be in the UFC. He's handled his regional competition accordingly, so now he gets this opportunity. I just kind of think that, you know, Zaleski's truly been paying his dues in the UFC. I mean, Zaleski knows what a 7-fight win streak in the UFC is like. Zaleski is extremely battle-tested, win, lose, or draw. I mean, he's always out there having these incredible wars. So, I mean, this is a situation where there is going to be pressure on Zaleski, just because it's like you're fighting a dude with nothing to lose. This guy's supposed to lose. It's his UFC debut. So, you know, I'm not sure if Zaleski is going to be taking as many risks as he normally does. I think he might kind of try to play it safe. But that being said, Benoit Saint-Denis might give him those openings, just in the sense that he's a very aggressive guy, always trying to initiate the grappling. So he might run into a Peruvian necktie. He might run into a flying knee. He might run into something along the way. And I just don't think he's ever seen anything like Zaleski before. So, yeah, give me Zaleski to win this fight. And I think it's a favorite or pass situation.
I like that. That's kind of where I was leaning, man. And it's nice to get your perspective there.
Go ask Luigi Vendramini how tough it is to debut against Zaleski's dos Santos, man.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. So everyone only talks about how Luigi took his bag, but they don't talk about how Luigi had to survive like a deep ass Peruvian necktie attempt like early on in that fight, and then eventually got flying knee KO'd.
That's a tough debut, man.
And it's like back to like the point we're talking about where it's like there's a lot of pressure because it's like Zaleski has so much to lose in a matchup like that. Like who the fuck is Luigi Vandramini? Like, you're Zaleski is a top 15, top 20 guy. Like, he's out here fighting, you know, the Stricklands. He knocked out Sean Strickland. He's out here fighting Salikov, Li Jingliang. I mean, he's fighting all the beasts in that division. So, you know, when you get these matchups with these no names, it just puts a lot of pressure on you. I mean, he's out here beating Max Griffin, who's on a roll these days. So, well,
couldn't you argue that maybe there's more pressure in fighting somebody with a name like Salikov or Li Jingliang, whereas maybe in this fight there's less pressure because there's no name. Like, he hasn't seemed to do well when he gets those bigger names.
Yeah, I have a theory about the Jingliang fight. That flight to China, man, that'll take everything out of you. And that's not to take anything away from Li Jingliang, who did fantastic. I mean, it's funny because we're going to talk about Jingliang here. Jingliang is a guy where it's like when he's a favorite, he's going to drop the ball against Jake Matthews and Neil Magny. But when he's an underdog, he's going to knock out Ponzinibbio and Zaleski. So he's an underdog here. Let's see what happens, right? But like, no, I truly believe that flight from China, I mean, or to China, just took a lot out of Zaleski. That was a kind of uncharacteristic performance. But back to the Salikov fight, you know, I actually bet Salikov in that fight. A lot of people think that Zaleski won the fight, but to me, it's not about who won or lost. To me, it's that was a competitive 3-round war and just lets you know the level that he's on. I mean, if you're going to split with Salikov, who is a top, who is a top 15 guy, And the fight was as close as it was. I mean, it just shows the kind of level that Zaleski's on. So I think he's on a different level than this guy. The reason why it's high pressure is because if you beat this guy, you were supposed to beat this guy, but you lose to this guy. That's, I mean, you're giving this guy a platform and a trajectory to go into the top 20. And it's a big setback if you lose to this guy. That's why it's a lot of pressure. So
that's a fair point.
But I still think he's going to come out here and win.
Yeah, we don't want any parlay shitters on here. So I think he should be fairly safe at -225. But I guess you never know.
Yeah, I'm leaving him off of an official play in that regard. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely my pick.
I'd like to see him at weigh-ins, right?
I agree, but I don't think he's had too many concerns there in the past. So you always want to see the face-off though, especially for a debutante. Make sure he actually matches up with his measurables that are listed. So here we go. Next fight, we got Albert Duryev versus Roman Kapilov. Kapilov suffered his only career loss to the hands of our friend Carl Roberson. And just like Roberson does against just about everyone that he beats, somehow he subs them. He did have a really bad eye poke leading up to that exchange. So maybe you want to give him a little bit of a discount fighting in his home country, a lot of pressure in Moscow there. And now we got Duryev coming off of Dana White's Contender Series, and he's coming in as a huge favorite, -340, and Kapilov coming back as a +260. I mean, realistically, we're expecting Duryev to come out here and put on the grappling pace. I mean, he had 100% takedown accuracy on Contender Series. That's the expectation, but I do love fading some Contender Series guys, so +260 on Kapilov as like one of those guys like, oh, you know, he lost to Roberson and Roberson sucks. He got submitted. But yeah, I mean, it could just be one of those like blind fade spots for me. I just wouldn't be running to include Duryev in any parlays or plays myself.
No, I don't necessarily agree personally. Duryev trains at Extreme Couture. Eric Nixick says he's smothering in the gym, man. In 90 seconds into that Dana White Contender Series fight, he gets into full mount. We were talking about Sean Strickland earlier. He trains with Sean Strickland, and that's one of his primary training partners. And if you know anything about Sean Strickland, he likes to try to kill his training partners. So if you're one of Sean Strickland's playthings, you are pretty battle-tested, as our friend Dan Levy likes to say. So I really do. While this guy is 8-1
I'm not 8-1. That's the other guy. Well, he's 14-3. I'm such a jerk off. Well, he's 14-3. I do. I think he is battle tested, man. And I think this is a setup spot for him. He got the Dana White Contender Series fight earlier, you know, in September. We're only here in October, just about to be November, but you know this is a fight that they're trying to get Kopylov kind of off their payroll, in my opinion. Signed him. I don't really think that he's gonna pan out to what they need him to be. But again, another guy, Book versus Eric Spicely, Verk versus Tom Breeze, Book versus Sam Alvey, pulling out, you know, lots of issues getting him to the cage. So I do. I think that he might get the sub. Maybe I'm square. Yeah. What do you think, Dan?
I mean, listen, I actually don't think he's 14-3. I think he's 16-3. I think they got that wrong. But bottom line, so back to the whole talk about the totem pole of the Russians, you got to put Roman Kopylov towards the bottom end of that, man. I mean,
oh yeah,
he's kind of got this pitter-patter style. He's not very imposing. Got submitted by Carl Roberson, which I don't give a shit if he was jet lagged, if it was his UFC debut. Like, dude, that is a red flag and a half. And I mean, you know, it's one thing for Ankalaev to get submitted by Paul Craig, but at least Paul Craig, he submitted Kennedy, he submitted Jamal Hill, he submitted a bunch of badass fighters. So it's like, even though he costs a lot of people a lot of money, Paul Craig's a top 15 guy. But to get submitted by Carl Roberson, I mean, dude, like that's
the glory kickbox.
a quote unquote glory kick, but it's it's a massive red flag to a point. And then you look at Duraev and talk about paying your dues on that regional scene, man. And he's been in there with all the toughest guys in Russia, and he's good everywhere the fight goes. He's aggressive, he's got that killer instinct. I think he's going to run over this guy, to be honest with you. So give me Duraev here to make a statement.
Yeah, I'm always willing to be open to others' ideas, especially on one that, you know, maybe I didn't have such a strong feel on. So I do appreciate your guys, your input here. And Duraev will be the official pick, although I might not end up playing it.
I'll probably have you play it by the end of it by Saturday when you're feeling a little froggy.
All right. We'll see how we get here. I can appreciate it. Hey, I did come around on Jessica Rose Clark and Tabitha Ricci last week, in all fairness.
And we cashed.
So all fair. But I think that'll brings us on to our next fight, huh?
Yeah.
We got wow. I mean, this we're starting to get into the meat of the card here.
Oh, yeah.
Because this one, I mean, Ricardo Ramos versus Zubairo Tukugov. Yeah, this should be a very fun fight. However, I mean, I got to lean to the Ramos side here.
Oh,
yep.
I thought I was going to be alone on that one.
No.
I thought I was pulling something crazy out this one.
Tell me why it's crazy. So Ramos at least has the advantage here on paper. Height, he's got the inch, he's got 4 inches of reach. And I do think he's just a better striker overall. He has very good in and out movement. And obviously he's got a lot of the flashy stuff, but I think since, he suffered that loss to Murphy, then he comes back against Algio, and yeah, it's a big step down in competition. But I do think we see like the real patience and growth of Ramos, who's still so young. I mean, 26 years old, and I think he's still got a lot of growth in the UFC. He's 6-2 already. So he's got his jiu-jitsu black belt, but he's also got a double spinning elbow knockout of Ayman Zahabi too. So I think he's got all the tools in the bag. And then he shows the offensive wrestling necessary to put Algio away in their last fight, because some of the, you know, early exchanges on the feet were a little bit closer. And, you know, Algio even outstrikes him, but Ramos ends up landing 8 takedowns, gets a ton, you know, 3.5 minutes of control time when he needs it. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, I just think that Tukugov won't be able to rely on his wrestling in this fight, because Ramos can make it difficult from any position. And I think just especially as the underdog, I just don't think Tukugov's overall control rate is as good as it could be. But I will say he has faced some pretty big names. So Guru, I mean, what are the reasons you were leaning on this fight?
It was so funny because one of the major red flags to me was that even though Ramos won, he got outstruck by Algio. But then I go to look at Tokugov, and that dude doesn't throw any strikes either. 50, you know, doesn't land more than 50 strikes in a fight. So, you know what I mean? When you look at his UFC stats, he's low output as well. He's not going to be punishing Ramos with pressure like he's going to need to be. And like you said, I think the wrestling, he's not going to be able to rely on it well enough. And what did we see with Ramos versus Dawodu? He gassed in the third round or took it off or thought he was up. I don't know whether it was coaching or gas tank. That was bad. And how about the draw versus Murphy? The split decision versus Morcano? You want to know the bet? And this is the bet. You bet this fight to be a split decision at plus 400. Dude, he's got Tokugov himself has 1, 2, 3, 4 split decisions in the UFC himself. And Murphy, we know, has a draw. You know what I mean? So it's like, What do you think, Dan? Tell me I'm crazy here.
Nah, I mean, to me, it's really about Ramos is one of these guys that he's ultra talented. He's got the physical tools. He's well-rounded. He can strike. He can grapple. He can do it all. It's just about the mental meeting the physical. Because, I mean... Mm. Sometimes he flakes out in these fights and you're like, really, dude? Like the Saeed fight, the Lerone fight, but then other times he does what you want him to do. And I feel like at some point he's gonna finally put it all together. I've been waiting for that to happen because he's been a talented prospect since even before his UFC days. I mean, I remember back in the day he was fighting, I don't know if it was LFA or looking for a fight or something, but he had this fight against this dude Manny Vasquez, I believe it was, and Dana White was like front row. They're looking to sign Ramos. He actually gets choked out in the first round, but then he comes back. He was like 21 or some shit, maybe 19 at the time. He comes back, wins his next fight, then he gets signed to the UFC, and I mean, he's better than Zuba. The issue with Zuba, look, Zuba's got a nice left hook, and he's got takedowns. It's just Zuba doesn't throw enough. Zuba's inactive. Zuba's got a gas tank issue. It's just like, Ricardo, are we going to show up to fight? How was that flight from Brazil to Abu Dhabi? Yeah. It's funny because after he knocked out Zahabi in New York, he stayed in New York for like 6 months straight. I mean, I'm questioning like, where's his head at, right? But I mean, he was born in 1995. Like, I wouldn't know what it means to be born in the 90s, man. So it's like one of those things where if he can just put it together, I mean, I think he's got the goods to win this fight. And you give me a plus 150, well, then I'm willing to take the chance to hope that he puts it together in this fight. It's just I'm very cognizant of the fact that, you know, he might flake out like he's done more than once. But I know the talent's there. I know the skills there. I know the size is there. I know the youth is there. And I know the talent is there. So give me Ramos and hopefully he shows up to fight.
I think the interesting thing with the knockout loss he had to Murphy was that was at Fight Island as well. So he's had that experience. Now he gets to go back and right the wrong.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I mean, Guru, would you go as far to say that this is our dog of the day?
I mean, geez, yeah.
I think I'm hitting it. I mean, I don't think that there's a more talented fighter that I'm backing at an underdog line on this card.
That's our dog of the day. That's our dog.
At least confidently, because there might be one coming up that I have to do, but like, it just might not be the right thing in the end. So we'll see. We'll get there. But guys,
that's our dog of the day. I think you're
dog of the day. I think plus 140, right? I like that.
Barring any weight cut issues in that low weight class.
So let's move on from our dog of the day here. And are we at the main card?
Yeah, we are. No, we're not.
No, this is the
head prelim.
Right, right. Okay.
Of course I know that. This is my wife we're talking
about. That's right. That's right. Oh, yeah, your wife, I'm sure.
Of course.
And everybody else's, right?
And everybody else's.
So you're obviously talking about Vina Chanchirova, right?
Yes.
Takara. Yeah. All right, so we have Amanda Ribas versus Vina Chanchirova. And this fight... Is it going to be a grappler's delight, or are we going to see like the Mackenzie Dern, you know, Janjiroba stand-up affair like we saw, you know, in Janjiroba's last fight? I tend to lean to thinking that Janjiroba actually might be able to implement her grappling in this fight. And once again, I'm looking here at an underdog line, plus 128 on FanDuel, plus 145 on DraftKings. But I do recognize that Hibosh is a very strong fighter, and she does have very good offensive wrestling. I just haven't really seen anyone test her defensively as much as I'd like to in the wrestling department, because I think that Janjiroba actually can make it interesting in the stand-up as well. Am I crazy for thinking that?
Yo, shaved head Ray Cooper just knocked out Magomed. That was crazy.
Shit! I gotta pull.
Wow. Okay.
First round.
Yeah, I think so. That was crazy.
Wow. Okay.
Oh my god, that was so crazy.
Good for him, man.
Wow. Not to detract from what you're talking about. No, I don't agree with the Virna pick at all. How can you look for Virna to try to wrestle and get takedowns when you? I mean, you saw Mackenzie Dern try to do the same thing, and
Mackenzie Dern off of her pregnancy,
yeah, bro. But like,
it's what do you mean? But bro, it's not the same thing. There's a reason why Dern had a one next to her name before she fought Mahina Hadriguez.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't want to play too much MMA math, but you know what I mean. Dern beat Virna as well,
which was a close fight. It was really close fight upon rewatch, in my book.
Listen, close enough, I guess. I just think that Rebus is able to keep it standing with her aggressiveness, and she's too crafty on the ground that she's quicker.
Talk to me about the Kanako Murata fight.
What about it?
I think Murata's a better wrestler, and she got caught in these bad positions.
Kanako Murata is in a wrong division. She's like a midget. She's like an atom weight, bro. Like she's fighting. It's like fighting mini me out there. I felt terrible for that chick. She gave everything she had against Virna.
Well, I mean, yeah. The way I would see it is that, I mean, Virna landed, you know, a lot of those distance strikes did come after the arm got completely mangled. But I just thought that between the Dern fight and the Murata fight, that she showed that she can compete on the feet. And I don't think Hibashi's stand up is anything special. And I don't know that she's been tested by a grappler like Virna before.
You say she's nothing special, but like that first round versus Marina Rodriguez was great.
Wrestling. She was great at wrestling. But yeah, you should be great at wrestling Marina Rodriguez, right?
Yeah.
This is the beauty of UFC stats is that if we go to the first round and we go to the distance strikes, round one, three of 12 from distance in round
that's
one.
That's fire, bro. That's fire.
Yeah. Exactly. So my point is that I think that Hibas has been tested by a better striker before. I just don't think she's been tested by a better grappler. But anyways, now that we've fought all about this fight so far, Dan, where do you come in on this one?
Yeah, that's a good point. Can you settle this for us, stepdad, please?
I mean, let's remember that Hibas is a black belt too. Now, is it the same caliber black belt as Virna? That's up for debate. But I'd say that Hibas is actually just better across the board, better athlete too. The only issue with Hibas is the chin. And that's not just because Marina Rodriguez, who's one of the best strikers in the division, knocked her out. I mean, back in the day, Pollyanna Viana knocked her out. And people can sit here and be like, oh, that was so long ago. How could you bring that up? Well, the reason I can bring that up is because she got knocked out her last fight, too. So, and in the women's divisions, when you have knockout losses, more than one especially, that's alarming, man, because, you know, those divisions aren't known for one-punch knockouts. And it's happened to her twice. Now, I'm not saying Virna can expose that, but I will give Virna a lot of credit because her striking has been getting better. That fight with Dern, although she lost, that was a fantastic fight. And man, I'll always be grateful for cashing on Virna against Felice Herrig. That was easy work. So I like Virna, but I got to go with Hibas here, man. I just think that she's going to be a little bit more athletic. She's going to be able to stop the takedowns, and Hopefully she's got an answer on the feet. That chin concerns me in any fight, because it's like, again, we could say Vierna doesn't have the stand-up required, but it's like, oh, but did Pollyanna Vienna have those stand-up required? So I don't think it takes much, but I do think that Ribas has the higher ceiling, so give me her to win this fight.
Interestingly enough, I mean, Ribas got knocked out at 125 her last fight.
Maybe it's stupid to assume, though, but, like, is she – oh, can we assume that she's trying to address these striking holes after getting knocked out in January? Like, has she spent the last 7 months focusing on boxing, or did she go back home to Brazil with her family and her dad and just training jiu-jitsu again?
I mean, that's kind of my thing. Like, I don't love that her dad's her coach. I feel like there are some people that I just like they're specific. I mean, like, listen, like I feel like it's a lot to comment on other people's family situations and stuff. I don't love that she's not being pushed by someone that doesn't have a relationship with her outside of the sport, but that works for a lot of people, as you saw with Khabib. You know, you could argue GOAT, whatever. But yeah, I mean, it, just from my perspective and what I've seen, I don't know that she's getting pushed in different places. But is Vina really going to be the one to test that? That's why she's not my dog of the day. I just might be intrigued to put a little play on her.
Do we feel like there's any chance to fade the narrative here and that maybe one of these girls for some reason gets a finish? For by any method,
I mean, Vina knockout is plus 1400. That's what I'm saying. If like, you want to fade the chin of Ribas,
I mean, just how about even just playing like the fight not to go the distance at plus 188 or something?
Yeah, I mean,
any narrative that we want that we see here?
Plus 188 inside the distance, that's
because even a Ribas KO, like plus 550, like oh, like or like you said, Jandy plus 750 KO. That it was so interesting because they have both ladies at plus 1200 by submission.
I'm sorry, you have plus 750 on FanDuel?
Yeah.
It's plus 1400 KO on DraftKings.
What? Plus 1400 KO?
Once again, we're not saying that this is like the most probable or anything.
Holy shit, that's
but just as like line value, I mean, like a couple dollars, like just for fun to see what happens, fading the I don't know. Yeah, don't
that's
go crazy
that's
on
a
that.
Mistake. They'll correct that by Saturday. Yeah. That's a mistake.
Is it? I guess. All right. Well, hey, I think we broke that one down to the best of our ability. Let's open up the main card here with, I mean, one of my favorite fights of the night, Magomed Ankalaev versus Volkan No Time Ozdemir. I mean, Magomed Ankalaev has been one of my favorite prospects since I've been scouting MMA, as it says in my Twitter handle. Now, that hasn't been for a long time, but I just really appreciate a well-rounded athlete, especially one that's so technical at the light heavyweight division. Now, I don't think Ankalaev really is gifted in terms of like size, but I do think is, and man, I'm going to talk about his fight IQ right now, but we did also see this guy get tapped out with 0.0001 seconds left too. So it's like, and he tapped also instead of just being put to sleep. So like, okay. I'm sure, you know, you could say plenty of things, but Paul Craig is legit. I'm all over the place right now. Anyways, Magomed Ankalaev, one of my favorite prospects. I love how fast his hands are. He's very technical, 65% defense, nothing to sneeze at, and with a 53% accuracy striking, but that's also paired with at least solid takedown ability. And he showed it when he had to use it against Nikita Krylov, which is it slightly concerning that he had to use it against Nikita Krylov? A little bit, but I do appreciate Krylov as a striker, and Ozdemir being outstruck in the past by Anthony Smith, of all people, who normally doesn't really do that type of stuff. And then, I mean, Ozdemir, he's fought the best of the best. So is this a quote-unquote step down? Or to me, I just feel like Ankalaev is really just that next guy. So, I mean, Guru, where are you at with this one?
Yeah, I think you hit it all on the head there, man. I think Ankalaev is next up to eat. Ozdemir is, I think, unfortunately for him, just kind of being put out to pasture after getting the quick rise to the title, has kind of faced a murderer's row in terms of Cormier, obviously losing to Cormier, losing to Smith, like you just said, which was not a good showing for him, like you said, getting outstruck. The split decision versus Reyes. The split decision versus Rakic, which I don't think that he won, in my opinion. And then, you know, looked decent in that first round versus Jiří. But Jiří, I feel like, was just kind of I don't know, being Jiri, and then he just dropped a bomb, and we haven't really seen him since. He was supposed to fight Krylov, and then that got rescheduled for Ankalaev here, which has also been rescheduled for this fight. So, I like Ankalaev here to get it done.
-340 right now to Uzdemir is +260. I mean, has Uzdemir ever been that big of a dog? You know, that is a good question to ask. I mean, Dan, what are you seeing here?
I mean, at a line like this, you got to question if Volkan's being disrespected. I mean, beat Rakic, arguably beat Dom Reyes. So it's not like this guy's out here fighting bums or anything. This guy's battle tested. This guy paid his dues. He's having these three-round competitive fights with the top guys in the division. I understand Jiri did his thing, but Jiri might be fighting for a title soon. So, but maybe Ankalaev is going to be fighting for a title soon too. It's just the line is just a little bit too wide for me. I still pick Ankalaev because, you know, I question where Volkan's confidence is at after such a devastating knockout, and then I question his confidence in general as a man. I mean, when you're I can speak as a bald man. Like when you start like getting hair restoration, like you ain't feeling too confident about yourself, are you? And I mean, I think that shit's for. I'm not gonna call it a UFC fighter a pussy, you know, because dude would you know punt me into the 10th row and kill me, but like. I think it all ties in, man, and I question his confidence big time. So give me Ankalaev here. I'm just not crazy about the price. I mean,
bro, that hairline was so bad when he came to fight with Jiri. I was like, what happened to him? Oh my god!
It looked worse when he got the treatment done. It's like, bro, just if you're going bald, shave your head, be a man. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, like what? So
I feel that.
I just think that Ozdemir has like one round. Like, what about his cardio? Even when he was at his best, like, is his cardio going to be there against Ankalaev? Who I don't. Maybe he may slow down.
Well, let me say this:
Ankalaev always game. He's got the power to carry through. Yeah,
please. Let me say this. I mean, you won the third round against Rakic. I'm pretty sure. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure you won the third round against Rakic. And then when you talk about third rounds. Nikita Krylov had his most success in that third round against Ankalaev, and Paul Craig finished Ankalaev in that third round. So it's not necessarily like Ankalaev is some cardio machine in the late rounds either.
That's true.
Yeah. So the way I think about it is that, you know, last fight, I took Ankalaev to go the distance, and I really liked that. I still think that this is going to be another fight where it ends up going the distance, and could it end up playing out a lot closer than it should for Ankalaev on paper? It could potentially. But, guys, this is the second leg of our parlay. We got Ankalaev at -300. Now it's at about -340. As it continues getting wider, you know, it's tough to say. But, honestly, I do think that Ankalaev is the better fighter, and he has shown us that he's willing to take whatever pathway is necessary to win the fight. It's just a shame that we have that Paul Craig memory in our heads. And, you know, Krylov isn't too far in the rear view. But I think ultimately, I just don't think Uzdemir is going to be the guy. I think it might be the next fight where it might be time to finally fade Ankalaev.
By the way, Uzdemir's, again, last fight against Jiri was on Fight Island. So he's now returning here as well. And this is another fight that I think could also go to split decision, by the way. +550 to be a split decision. Like,
interesting.
So,
all right,
we can move along, sir.
Now we have another return here. So we have Li Jingliang versus Khamzat Chimaev, boys, Smish. And he's actually talking about eating the leash. it's like really uncomfortable hearing him talk about I'm going to eat him. He's not even saying smash anymore. Now he's talking just like eat him and beat his face and eat him. And I'm like, bro, like, I don't know. That's just.
Well, let me say this. Aren't like leeches the one that like eat things?
Yeah. So it's funny because I think leeches actually came back and said, we'll see who's going to be the one that eats who or something like that. Yeah. Like, it was hilarious. I was like, you know, this guy seems like he's like Dan said so poignantly before, Lee is the underdog here, my friends. Khamzat is now -550 on FanDuel, -575 on DraftKings. And I cashed out big time on Lee Moneyline and Lee +600 by KO against Santiago Ponzinibbio. And you know the reasons why I did that? And that was on like our second or third ever podcast, guys.
Yeah.
The why I did that was Ponzinibbio and the, you know, what he was coming back from. Shamayev, what is he coming back from?
Yeah, he's coming back from some shit for sure.
I mean, that role. There is two gigantic favorites on this main card that I am super sketched out about, and this is one of them. And I could be totally wrong, but listen, Lee is a black belt. He does know how to get up. You know, we saw a decent stand-up early in the Magny fight, but he gassed himself out trying to take Magny down. Also, that training camp, he's traveling all across the world getting away from COVID. So he had a bit of an abbreviated camp. However, we have seen Lee let us down in the past. So it's not like this is a single moment in error. You know, if Lee tries to initiate the clinch on Shamayev, yeah, you might as well throw out your underdog ticket right away. But what I do like is his range management. Those leg kicks he likes throwing, probably not the best idea in this fight. Shamayev will try and catch those to take you down. But, yeah, the hook's coming in, the counters, but Lee is also giving up 2 inches of height and 4 inches of reach here. I really, really, really want to play Lee, like, so badly. But,
no.
I think it's Shamayev by decision.
Yes. There you go.
More than Lee Moneyline, as much as I want to.
I would love to play Lee. We were look. I think the proper spot to fade Shamayev would have been, like, as he was coming back from like those, you know, three fights.
Leon Edwards.
Right. Like when he was supposed to be fighting or whatever. But now that he's coming back to this spot, it's not like they're just giving him an easy fight per se. And because it's not. The Leech is a beast. But it's just that he has shown such a propensity to be taken down. It's just, it's kind of natural in his style with his kind of wide stance, and he is flat on his lead leg, and he just kind of throws the leg kick often with, you know, kind of you know, a little, not loop, like just kind of wider hook shots. He's just going to be easy to clinch with, and we've seen his willingness to clinch and to grapple. And, you know, when you get into, you know, now this pissing contest, I'll eat you, you eat me. He's going to want to test his grappling for worse reasons.
Oh, and, no, don't say that.
So to your point, we like to fade the narrative, but you got to figure out which narrative to fade. And the narrative to fade is Chimaev finish. That's the narrative to fade. I think Leech is a beast. And I think it takes a while. So I like maybe the fight to go the distance at +230. Chimaev by decision at +280. I mean, what's the round prop? Is it 1.5? I mean, I like over 1.5 if we can get that.
Good question.
What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, like I told y'all, with Lee, it's like I bet him at -170 against Jake Matthews, thinking this was like easy ass money. I mean, it's like, dude, you're like levels above Jake Matthews. I mean, he's out there getting dropped, which he gets dropped in like every single fight. Like, let's not forget about that. Yeah. Getting out wrestled, Lechak against Neil Magny, and Neil Magny looks like D1 Magny, and then, you know, Pons and Zaleski get knocked out by him. So it's like, it's hard to cap his fights, but the big difference here is that just relentless pressure in the grappling department of Khamzat Chimaev, which I think is going to make the big difference here. And don't sleep on Chimaev's hands either. I mean, you saw what happened to Gerald, right? So
to sleep.
As long as he comes back looking like himself, I think he's going to win this fight. It's just, you know, I'm not really trying to find out at -5 something, -6 something. It is a dog or pass situation. I just don't think the dog's going to win.
This is the way. This is. I just found this. I love this prop on FanDuel. Either whether you agree with the way that we handicapped it, or maybe the way that
you know, everybody maybe thinks about it with the early finish. You have to play Chimaev. You can get Chimaev round one or two minus 110, or you can get Chimaev round three or decision, which is more where I lean, at plus 160.
Chimaev and over 1.5 is plus 120.
I love and that.
Play. The fight over 1.5 is minus 120. So honestly, fight those over 1.5, fight over 1.5 for me is probably smash.
The problem is if it goes 30 seconds, none of us are surprised.
Yeah.
And that's trouble.
So maybe not smash.
Yeah, not like smash, but like
right, yeah. Like a little, you know, tap. A
little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right, we probably can move along.
Yes.
Minus 100 fight.
Now, looks like a final piece to me. We got Alexander Volkov, Drago, versus Marcin Tybura. And I really hate those types of nicknames where it's like their name. Like Silva, Da Silva, like, you know. Anyways, I digress. So we have Alexander Volkov, 4-inch height advantage, 2-inch reach advantage against Marcin Tybura. And that just starts off at where the advantages are for Alexander Volkov. He is so much more of a technical striker. While they have similar defense, a lot of that is tied into Tybura's offensive wrestling and what that happens to do to his opponents. Volkov is out there in striking battles going 25 minutes with Ciryl Gane and, you know, ultimately holding his own and just embarrassing most other guys that he fights on the feet. Also, Alexander Volkov, you know, take away the Curtis Blaydes fight, whatever. I mean, listen, this guy has great takedown defense even against Curtis Blaydes, because if you look at what he did against Blaydes compared to some of Blaydes' other opponents, he did stuff a decent amount of those takedowns, and he got up a lot, and his cardio held out. Now, he's a big, beefy boy. Now, I don't think Tybura is going to be able to really get inside and walk him down. The 30-foot octagon is going to play huge for Volkov here, and I just think, you know, even though as I peek over at the line here, just for the latest update, we got minus 290 on Volkov, plus 225 on Tybura. Third leg, it's a part of the play of the day over here, because I just I really don't think that Tybura continues his run. Volkov, off of the Gane loss, he's ready to get back at it. So, guys, that parlay was sitting at plus 134 when we played it. Yesterday it was plus 125. If you want to jump in and keep Ankh alive as a leg, that's up to you or not. But, you know, I definitely still feel confident in it. So, Guru, yeah. Add on.
Yeah, no, I can't help but agree with everything that you've said. I just feel like the worry over Alexander Volkov's grappling is a little bit overblown. I don't think Tybura, I don't know how long, even if he gets the takedown, right? How, like you're saying, how long can he rinse and repeat for? How long can he hold down Volkov, right? With his pressure. I just think that we've also seen that the judges are not rewarding grappling without striking. So I think Tybura is going to be too busy trying to hold down the bigger guy, and then Volkov will work his way up.
I will say, in all fairness, just to give Tybura credit, is that his ground and pound is one of the most effective once he is able to ground people. I just think that when he opens up to get those strikes that he's normally looking for,
Volkov
has those elbows from bottom, or he hip escapes. And like, he's actually good at those things. And I think he wears down Tybura, and a three-round fight, I just think he's going to win from distance. But Dan, are you thinking similarly?
Yeah, I mean, look, you got to give Tybura a lot of credit. I mean, there was a point in his career when he had lost 4 out of 5 fights, and it seemed like it was over, and now he's on a 5-fight streak. So all credit where credit is due. It's just that he tends to get rocked early in a lot of his fights, but you know, the guys he's facing aren't able to capitalize. And we'll talk about that when we get to Glover Teixeira. But you know, someone who can capitalize is Volkov. And I think he will capitalize. So, yeah, give me Volkov.
He's coming in with that new dad strength. So I do expect.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh.
265-pound Volkov's a fucking a mythical creature, because I mean, ever since he moved up to 265, because he used to be like 247 or something, now he's 265. 265 Volkov, look out for him. He's sitting down on his punches more because he used to kind of be known for that volume style, but now he's putting people down. So I'm excited, and I think he's going to win.
Do we play Volkov by knockout? Is that like – do we want a violence play?
I will say it was kind of sketchy how Tabura had to like cover up and weather the storm against Greg Hardy of all people. So, I mean, like realistically, I don't think it happens in the it might happen in the first round. Yeah, I think – you know what? That's actually not the worst of idea. I really think Volkov inside the distance would be solid, but let's see. What is
– you can get him at plus 150 by knockout. Wait, but so you can get him at plus 150 by knockout for the course of the whole fight, but you can also get Alexander Volkov by round one or two at plus 175.
KO or submission plus 120. You might as well just take the knockout. I'm not so sure he would be looking for a submission.
You think you're really going to knock him out in the third round, though?
I would rather just play a knockout straight because Volkov is game all fight.
That's true. I just feel like I just feel like by the third round, he would have gotten knocked out already. Otherwise, it's going the distance. In my but I mean, what the fuck do I know?
You make a solid point because Tabura does have a habit of covering up. And as Dan does mention, I mean, we got Mac Daddy Volkov out here. So he could be putting on those big punches.
But. And I just think that by 10 minutes in, we've seen these athletes, they settle into a pace. And when these big boys settle into a pace, it's like a little bit heavier than sparring. They're just out there having fun. So.
All right. Well, now we got a featured event on the main card here. We got Islam Makhachev versus Dan Hooker, and this is the other fight that I was mentioning earlier, where like the line is just so sketchily wide. But at the end of the day, does that mean I'm going to fade it? I'm not sure, but okay. So now here we go. Dan Hooker is plus 440 on FanDuel. Islam Makhachev minus 650. I mean, Makhachev is the quote unquote next coming of Khabib, and you know we definitely see it in his ability to chain wrestle, but he's just not. I don't think that he is that same exact level. And I think he's being priced like he is that same exact level. And Dan Hooker, if there's one thing that guy has, if you go back and watch the Poirier versus Hooker fight, the first thing that they talk about as they're breaking down the fight in the first round is how Poirier mentions that Dan Hooker's step-in knee is the most dangerous weapon he has, and that's what he's been, you know, really keeping an eye on during his camp. That plays in so heavily in this Makhachev fight. Because if Dan Hooker wants to win this fight over three rounds, he needs to land that knee on a single leg. He needs to land that knee, or he needs to what? Faint and win with pace and pressure? I don't think that happens with a guy that can wrestle so well. I think that really puts your volume down for a guy like Hooker, who, you know, I mean, realistically, as I'm slacking here on the stats, my friends, I'm sorry. But, I mean, Dan Hooker does throw about 5 strikes per minute. That's going to come down significantly because Makhachev, but statistically, less than a strike absorbed per minute. So Hooker, he needs to land the perfect shot here. Can I trust that? I don't know if you necessarily need to because the line is plus 450. So it might be a little shot here just fading the Makhachev narrative for me. That's what I'm going to do.
I would love to see some sort of game-breaking, pay-per-view ceiling sort of knockout here. Almost to the point where you could play Dan Hooker by KO at plus 1,100 on DraftKings because that line is absurd. But unfortunately, I just think that it goes to decision and that Makhachev gets it done with his inevitable wrestling pressure because... and we also showed that he's not even necessarily a one-trick pony against Thiago Moises. You know, he was able to, you know, set up his wrestling with
these. They look like they were in two different weight classes. I'll be honest with you. Like that. I mean, I don't like that's the thing. Across from Dan Hooker, these guys. Dan Hooker's big. I mean, Hooker's got a 5-inch reach. You think he can't scoop up the? I mean, he loves scooping up the neck.
I think that it's worth a flyer at plus 1,100 by knockout.
You know, but see, I'd rather say plus 800 inside the distance.
Oh, yeah. All right.
I think he has shown the ability consistently. That's two of Hooker's things are the step in knee and then that front choke, that series of front chokes. So what do you think, Dan? Where are you at?
I mean, it's knee or guillotine or bust or Darce or Anaconda or bust.
Yeah.
Islam's just, man, he seems like he's headed towards the title. I think he's the real deal. His pressure is insane, and you got to catch this guy. So will Hooker do it? I mean, I'm not laying no minus 800 on anybody.
Right.
So it's Hooker or pass. It's just I'm not trying to throw away a unit on Hooker. I watch him win, right? But so give me Islam.
That's fair. And you know what? My circle pick, who I take on my, like, you know, oh, this is my Tapology or whatever, I'm probably taking Makhachev. Let's be serious here. But last week we did a little quarter unit on Caceres inside the distance. We were able to cash out on it. And that was so sketchy, to be honest. So is it like a similar, like, plus 800 here for an inside the distance? Probably not an official play, but will it be on my personal, you know, FanDuel account? Will I have like $5 to $10 on a Hooker inside the distance? Probably. It'll be a degenerate play. It's a full degenerate. I'm sorry. Okay.
Get out of here.
I apologize. Okay. Yeah. Because Makhachev is going
to
win.
We don't take kindly to your top around here.
Here we go. First of our two co-main event, interim bantamweight title bout, Peter No Mercy Jan versus Corey Sandhagen, the Sandman. It's not official, but that's what we're going with. Sandhagen comes in 4-inch height advantage, 3-inch reach advantage. Right off the bat, I mean, yeah, it looks very similar to the TJ Dillashaw encounter. And I do think that it actually could play out stylistically pretty similarly. Piotr Jan, obviously, we know he should be holding the belt right now.
He is holding the belt right now.
Right. Yeah, Dan has been very vocal about this, actually, and I love it because Piotr Jan is the title holder. I mean, and listen, we had huge bets on Jan, and we were devastated because we read that so cleanly, and now the second fight is priced
so much money on Peter Jan that night. It's
God.
That's called a bad beat. Shit happens. Yeah. But listen, I mean, you make that bet 9 times out of 10, you're winning it. So
that's it. Yeah. Listen, Sandhagen, does he sound a little cocky to you guys coming in and talking about everything? What do you think?
It's really a thing for me where I think Sandhagen one day should be challenging for the title, but I think that TJ Dillashaw fight was alarming, even though I scored that fight for Sandhagen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the way you should handle TJ Dillashaw, if you have aspirations for fighting for a world title, you should be going out there and knocking this guy out. I mean, Dillashaw's had chin issues. He's coming off the USADA suspension. I'm surprised Dillashaw ate some of those knees. I gotta give him a lot of credit, but it was massively alarming how easily Sandhagen got pushed up against that fence, and he just doesn't really have much of an answer for that. And Piotr Jan's got great boxing, but don't sleep on his grappling either. I mean, going into that Sterling fight, everyone was saying the grappling would be Sterling's biggest path to victory, and it was Peter Jan landing like 7 or 8 takedowns.
Those Muay Thai trips were so dirty.
Yeah.
He just put his leg behind him and pushed him. It's the shit you do on the playground. It was so, oh my God. I remember we were watching that fight together, right?
Yes.
Like we were cheesing. We were like, oh, we're dancing, our bet is cashing, he's kicking his ass. Nope.
Yeah, and you know, shout out to my boy Alex Caceres, who took his illegal knee like a man and came back and won the fight via rear naked choke, because you know, he actually believes in himself.
Shout out to Anthony Lionheart Smith, right? Same idea.
Exactly. And when I talk like this, I want y'all to know I consider Aljamain Sterling to be the clear-cut number one contender. So it's not like I'm out here like thinking he's some bum. I mean, the guy has proven himself. He's clearly the number one contender in the division. He's just not the champion. The champion means that you're the best bantamweight on planet Earth. And Aljamain Sterling is not the best bantamweight on planet Earth. The best bantamweight on planet Earth is Piotr Jan. So while there's going to be moments, because based off Piotr Jan's style, You know, he kind of likes to give his opponents this false sense of security, lets them have their moments from time to time. But when it's time for Piotr Jan to turn up, I just don't see at this point in time anyone stopping him. So unless he eats like a big knee and gets knocked out or something like that, I mean, it's not going to be a case that he came out of shape. This dude is a madman with his training. He's just, you know, I think it's going to be knee or bust or maybe a controversial decision. I just don't see Piotr Jan allowing that kind of thing to happen. Like, I just think he's too smart, too skilled across the board. And Sanhagen, based off that last fight, I think he should be fighting like a Rob Font. I think he should be fighting like, you know, like if Cody Garbrandt was still in the division, something like that, you know, get a couple more wins, then go back to, you know, fighting the top three guys in the division. Because you see how Aljamain smoked him. TJ Dillashaw, I mean, even though I thought Sanhagen won, that was a disappointing performance. That was a letdown. So while this could be interesting at times, ultimately, I think Piotr Jan is going to pull away. And whether it's mixing in those trip takedowns you were referring to, whether it's that clean boxing, just his fight IQ is on a different level. I think he's a top five pound-for-pound fighter right now. Like, I really – that's how high I am on Piotr Jan. So I think that he's going to – I think he's got something for Corey Sanhagen come Saturday.
I totally agree. And honestly, I mean, as far as placing bets on this fight, let's go back to the well here, because DraftKings has these awesome parlays, Piotr Jan and over 2.5 -105.
That's a beautiful play.
And it was -110 earlier. So let's wait a little bit. People maybe are thinking this is a violent spot, or maybe the people are betting Sanhagen, but if that can get to plus money, that is potentially, because that parlay, I don't think it was. I mean, honestly, potentially, that could end up being the play of the day.
Listen, I really like Peter, like you guys said, in this spot. I like this to go a little bit longer. Peter, round 4-5 decision, -110. And one of my favorite parlays, guys, is parlaying this fight to start round 3 with the next fight to start round 3. Which we got at plus money.
Yes, so, and it's official play already.
Yeah, so I need, you know, 10 minutes and 1 second of each title fight to cash some bets. And, I mean, shit, that's a great way to be rooting and not even have to pick a side.
Amen.
We're just essentially rooting for some good fights. And we know Piotr Jan, like you said, is going to take some time to cook up.
I like that. So it sounds like we have a good consensus there. Now, boys, it's time for the main event. We made it. Like we like to say, I mean, Jan Blachowicz, Polish Power versus Glover Dad Strength Teixeira. We're giving out nicknames here today. Point. Yeah, right? I love both of these guys so much. Like, honestly, Adesanya came in, you know, as like my favorite fighter. I wasn't even upset when Jan beat him. Like, he's just such a likable guy, and now he's a dad, so he's got that Polish dad power. I mean, it can't get any better than that. You see him with the baby on embedded, and he's trying to eat like the handle on like the airplane or the bus that they're on. And it's really nice seeing him come into his own and, like, you know, grow into being a father. But I can't help but wonder, are there any distractions out there? I mean, we saw him on like that ninja show, right?
The Ninja Warrior, yeah. In Poland.
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
I mean,
it's a different level of celebrity over there when you become the world champ.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He's like their Mike Tyson.
Jan has been like the underdog forever. Now it's Jan -355 and Glover +270. What do you think?
Yeah,
about that
is weird to see him in a favorite spot. But I mean, listen, man. You look at Glover Teixeira. Last time he fought for a belt was UFC 172 in 2014 versus John Jones. Like, I just feel like the Cinderella story never pans out in the UFC. And this 5-fight winning streak for this 41-year-old, 42-year-old, probably possible borderline Hall of Fame fighter, man, probably Hall of Famer. Like, I think it ends with Polish Power. Like, I don't think that he gets it done, man. I just, even with What is he going to do? He's just going to take him down and submit him, and that's it. Like that's how that works.
That's a good question. Now I want to pass this off to Dan. What are you thinking on this fight?
I mean, listen, all due respect to Glover, the guy's a badass, and to make it back to this spot, you got to give him all the credit in the world. So he's got all my respect. I mean, I love the guy. I'm a huge fan. How could you not be? I just simply don't think he's a threat to the UFC title. You look at these fights he's been winning, and not to discredit them, just to honestly, you know,
critique,
pick apart what happened in those fights. I mean, you know, Carl Roberson almost knocks him out, but Carl Roberson can't grapple to save his life. I mean, Thiago Santos almost knocks him out, but Thiago Santos, you even threaten a submission, he's tapping the mat right away. Jan Blachowicz has the skills and the smarts to, when he rocks Glover Teixeira, he's not about to give up that easy takedown. He's not about to quit. He's not like, we're dealing with a world champion here. And I think that when he rocks Glover Teixeira, he's going to put the finishing touches on it and get him out of there. So give me Ann Still. And yeah, I'm sure there are distractions. That's what happens when you're a world champion. I mean, everyone wants a piece of you. So yeah, you're definitely right about that. And this is the best Glover we've seen in a while. I mean, he's also like 41, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool to see Glover win, not because I want to see Blachowicz lose. It's just because I like both these guys. So it'd be a cool story either way. But give me Jan Blachowicz and Still.
I totally feel that, because as much as I want to play Glover here, and as much as the Jacare Ray fight supremely concerns me about how available Blachowicz's hips are, but I just don't think that Glover is able to finish Jan, even if he does get top position. I've seen Jan throw up triangles, throw up arm bars, do a lot of different things to reverse position from bottom, and he is very technically sound and a black belt himself. So I don't see him out of water here. This is not the Corey Anderson fight from however long ago. But I do think that there will be large moments of control for Glover along the cage. There might be a few times where he takes him down. And I don't think that Jan has this one-punch knockout power that a lot of us seem to talk about. And Glover, his defense isn't great. But, I mean, this guy is in the best shape of his life right now. He's been training, you know, single-mindedly for this fight. And to me, I took the over 2.5. I threw my biggest play so far on that. And I mean, right now on DraftKings, it's listed at minus 125. I believe I got it at a minus 110 on FanDuel. So I'm curious if that line's moved at all, Guru, if you see that. But then also, I took the fight goes the distance. I put down at plus 192.
Yeah, that's what it's listed at now.
I really tend to think that there is going to be a lot of control in this fight on both sides, and that there isn't going to be as much striking. And I do think that Jan is going to be able to land on Teixeira. And listen, a finish wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world to me. It's not like Glover hasn't been hurt by, like Dan said, almost everyone he faces. So
even the Anthony Smith fight in the beginning, he's getting hurt. But what you're starting to see right now is that, other than the fact, like, it's not only is there no value, it's the public is starting to run with this narrative. And when you watch the public run with these narratives, it just doesn't happen. Jan Blachowicz at minus 105 for a knockout. Minus 105? That's crazy. Like, he's favorite. Like, it's that likely? It just seems too pricey to me. Maybe I'm crazy for that thought, but when you can get like Islam Makhachev by decision at plus money, but I can't get Jan Blachowicz by knockout at plus money.
Blachowicz by submission is plus 1200, interestingly enough. If you want to fade the narrative and still say inside the distance for Jan, I'm just saying, because he could hurt him and Glover goes to shoot for the takedown, except this time it's not Thiago Santos and he's in a guillotine.
I'm getting a little nervous with my going the decision bet, but I do think it goes over 2.5. I think we cash some time. I know that they're friends. I think that he's going to have a mutual respect there. And I think it takes some time to really get cracking. Like, I don't think he's going to get cracking like he got cracking at Dominic Reyes.
I think it's more similar to the Adesanya fight.
In that respect. Yeah, so I mean, hey, Dan, any last thoughts before we wrap up here?
Nah, man. I mean, I think we covered everything, and I appreciate y'all having me on, man.
It was really a great time.
Thank you so much for giving us, you know, an hour and a half of your night, man, especially during the World Series. We really, really appreciate everything you've honestly done for the MMA community, Twitter community as a whole, man. Like, I'm not sure you realize that, man, but you're a pretty big pillar in the community. So we really appreciate, you know, everything that you do and you taking your time to be here with us tonight.
Oh, yeah. The pleasure's all mine, and I appreciate the kind words, man.
Yeah, man, keep on cracking. And listen, you guys can find us at Chronic Combat on Twitter, at Chronic Combat Conversations on Instagram. You can find me at Guru Scouting MMA on Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, and Tapology. You can find my awesome co-host, TB Scouting MMA, on Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, and Tapology. You can follow Dan Levy at Best Fight Picks on Twitter, man. And catch us next week, UFC 268, Usman versus Covington 2. Your boys are going to be in attendance.
Yeah, so. Guru surprised me with the birthday gift from the top ropes. This dude dropped. I couldn't even believe it. First of all, the night before, he just gives me an Usman t-shirt. I'm like, all right, sick, 30th birthday, you know. Got a t-shirt.
Yeah, I said, yeah, I'm doing it big for you, bro. And I hand him a t-shirt and I say, yo, I'm doing it big for you. And here's a t-shirt. And
I was like, thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. Smiles. But meanwhile, the next day, I surprise him and I'm like, nah, man, we're actually going to the show. That's what the shirt's for.
Him and my two bros teamed up. So we get the pleasure of going. So, hey, guys, stay tuned. We want to bring you some awesome content that week also. But thank you so much again, Dan. And have a great night, everybody.
Seriously, hope to have you back again, Dan. And hope to have all you guys back as well, guests. So keep listening.
All right, sweet. Awesome.